Hi everyone, welcome to our third Philosophy Exchange podcast. I am Jakob and today I'm joined by Johanna and Mason.
Hi.
Hello.
So nice that you're here. Today we're going to have our first philosophy interview with our very own Philosophy Exchange member, Mason. Mason is currently doing his PhD in the philosophy of climate science, and he wants to talk to us about his work today.
I'm really excited about this episode today. I think it's a really important topic to talk about, especially because the times are really calling for it. And I was really surprised to actually hear from you, Mason, that often when tell people that you study philosophy of climate science, that, you know, they have like no clue. So I'm really excited about knowing more about it myself and also letting the listeners know more about it.
Nice. Yeah, philosophy of climate science is much more than any one area in philosophy as well. I mean, myself personally, I do philosophy of climate science from a philosophy of science perspective. But you can also look at climate science from other perspectives, from ethical perspectives. So you can ask questions like, what should people do given that there is climate change? What should each individual do? Is there a personal responsibility that people have? Is it a responsibility for nations to try and mitigate or adapt to climate change? And do each nation have the same responsibilities, or should the responsibilities be based off of something like how much you've polluted in the past to contribute to climate change? These are all ethical questions that are very interesting from a philosophy standpoint that I don't personally deal with or work on, but they're interesting nonetheless. So my viewpoint on climate science from a philosophical standpoint is very skewed towards the philosophy of science perspective. I'm looking at modeling, looking at confirmation, looking at all of these things, replication, these just general issues in philosophy of science applied to the specific science of climate science.
So could you give us a brief description of what it means to have a philosophy of science perspective on philosophy of climate science?
That's a good question. I would initially first only think of the ethical issues, right? The questions that you just mentioned, like who's responsible for changing the behavior, who can be made responsible for negative outcomes. And I also loved hearing in the last episode, the thought experiment with the company making decisions that have a negative impact on the climate. So I'm really excited to actually hear your perspective on climate science and to learn more about what it means to have a scientific perspective on the philosophy of climate science.
Yeah, so coming to climate science with a philosophy of science perspective, what we do and what I do on my day-to-day basis is I look at general problems and general features of philosophy of science. So talking about, like what we were saying before, confirmation of models, that's something that is talked about generally within philosophy of science. And I take those same features and apply it to the specific science of climate science. And because of the specific features of climate modeling, let's say, there are unique issues that come about within the science. And because of these unique features, there have been new ways to evaluate models because of it.
That's quite interesting. I'd be interested to know what specific aspects of philosophy of science and philosophy of climate science you are working on. Mm-hmm.
So my specific work right now is looking at expert judgment within climate science. So how do experts understand the system, and then how do they make judgments based on that understanding, and how those judgments are then used for policymakers?
What makes your work specifically philosophical?
So I did my master's degree at the London School of Economics. And for my master's thesis, I looked at the methodology that was utilized by the IPCC for understanding detection and attribution of climate change. So this is a question of how do we know that climate change is occurring? And then given that we know that it's occurring, what do we attribute the causes to, or how do we know which cause is the right cause, or the cause that is in reality. And this is a very philosophical question to look at the methodologies and to evaluate them. So from a philosophy of science standpoint, there are a few topics that I've mentioned before, and then also many, many others where we can look at how machine learning affects climate science, how we understand tipping points within the climate, these unlikely but potentially very impactful things due to the fact that they are incredibly unlikely, and there is little known about how the interactions work together.
Yeah, nice. I think you touched on a lot of like really, really interesting questions there. And I specifically have two questions. So the first one where you said like, how does AI affect climate science? I'm like, whoa, what? Like, I've never thought about that before. Actually, now that I think about it, it's probably obvious because like computing power, but I really wanted you to talk about that. And then afterwards, so you said that in your master thesis, you were looking at like, how do we judge climate change? And then there's like about the all the uncertainty that we have. How do we know it's occurring? And I'm just like, there's something that I really want to understand. How is it possible today that some people still do not believe that climate change exists? But first, I would really like to talk about the AI thing.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting couple of questions. So as we all know, computers have become a very important and very prevalent aspect of our daily lives. And it will only increase as we move forward in time. And so within climate science, people have talked about machine learning methodologies as a way to understand the climate system. And there have been papers written about how we should understand statistical downscaling. So how we take large models of a large geographic area and statistically downscale them to a more fine grain area. And if machine learning can help us in this. Now, there are also trade-offs with using machine learning because it's often seen as a black box type of system where we're giving the machine learning algorithms lots and lots of data to create these connections between different points. And there are questions as to how the inner workings of this machine learning algorithms, if we're really getting anything out of it. So while this is not my specific area of expertise within climate science, it's a very interesting field and there are very smart people working on it and trying to solve some of these problems. Now, moving on, so your question was, given all that we know about climate science, how are there still people out in the world that still don't believe that there is significant climate change and that it is caused, I would argue, to a great extent by humans, correct?
Yeah.
So that's also a really quite important question for our time today, because it is a problem not only in climate science, that there is a wealth of knowledge about something and people don't act in a way that reflects that large set of knowledge to show that they would agree with it. So we can even look at something that is happening right now to all of us around the world in COVID-19. There's a wealth of understanding about how diseases and viruses impact people and how it moves around in our spaces, but there are still people that won't wear a mask. And I see those things as very similar. It's really not just a problem, like I was saying, for climate science, but it goes to maybe a distrust that a portion of the world's population has in science and with experts. And unfortunately, I think it has quite negative consequences for all sciences, and specifically ones that impact people's lives in the healthcare industry, like with COVID-19 or with climate science. People are being affected by climate change with an increase in the amount of hurricanes that have occurred. Now, it's impossible to show that these events would not have occurred had it not been for climate change. But it is a relatively easy claim to make that these events are much more extreme because of climate change. And we can even go further and talk about rising sea levels too, that there will be island nations within the next 100 years that are no longer there because of our rising seas. And these leads to what we were talking about a little bit before with our ethical questions. Now, if the seas rise to the extent that it takes out the land where people had once lived and lived for hundreds of generations before, well, these people have to go somewhere. And who's going to take them in? Think about the mass migrations that will happen because whole nations have been eliminated. And then also the extent growing from an ecological standpoint, crop growing, where there is feasible land to grow crops will change because of climate change. And unfortunately, as we see, our world today is not very accepting of people from outside of a given nation. Like I'm thinking about the United States as an example. Right now, they have some policies that, and some people in high political offices that aren't as willing to take in refugees and people who have nowhere else to go. And if climate change continues the way that it's projected to, and the way that we understand that it will, there will be a lot more people who are in need of a safe place to live.
You said something earlier that I thought was quite interesting. You said that one of your theses is why people don't believe in COVID or why people wouldn't believe in climate science is a huge distrust in experts. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite interesting because you are an expert on experts. So do you think that people in general should give like a higher priority or should listen to expert judgments, and why or why not?
Yeah, very, very great question, Jakob. So while I do believe that every person on the planet should have a healthy level of skepticism in their life and question things, I do believe that experts in given fields have a little bit better understanding of what they're talking about than a lay person who maybe goes on online and looks at the top two websites on Google. So while I do think that in general, people should trust experts, there, of course, would be situations that every person is fallible and we can always be wrong. Science, as we all know, is not right 100% of the time. If it was, we would still have the earth circling around the sun. So science progresses, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't trust our experts because they do have a much better understanding of what they're talking about than the average person does.
Wait, I just want to make sure that we wouldn't have the earth we wouldn't have the sun circling around the earth. We would just still believe it and refuse to accept that our theories are wrong. I just want to make sure that we have that out there, that like physics wouldn't have changed, just like if we would think that science is always right, and we would just have like theories that can't be disconfirmed, we can't progress. Make that for the listener.
There was not a point in time where it switched. That's correct.
Can I turn around turn my question around? I think all of us read like philosophy of climate science papers, and as you said, philosophers like evaluate methods of climate scientists. And most philosophy papers that we read were fairly critical, I mean constructive criticism, but they were like pointing out critical problems in climate science models, so like the problem of initial conditions. I mean, we don't have to go into this here, but given that philosophers and climate scientists also obviously know about like their problems and limitations of their models, why do they believe in climate change?
Yeah, as you mentioned, there's problems with initial conditions, this butterfly effect where a small change in the initial conditions can have a huge impact on the ending projection. And there's also a similar phenomena called the Hawk-Moth effect, where there's some structural uncertainty in the models themselves, where small perturbations within the model themselves can have a huge impact on the end results. So it is a very valid question to ask, why should we trust anything that these models have to say. Now, what I would always come back to is we don't need an understanding from modeling to make these kind of claims. So we can take our understanding of climate science itself outside of any model projections. Just from a purely scientific standpoint, we know that an increase in greenhouse gases will increase the heat, and that increase in heat will affect the climate generally. So without any kind of modeling, that is a very straightforward argument.
That's really interesting. So you're basically saying there is a lot of uncertainty about a lot of things, but the overall argument that climate change exists and that it is man-made is just a logical conclusion that, like, also based obviously on scientific facts. But even though we have all these modeling uncertainties, we can be very, very sure about the fact that one step affects the other in a very obvious way.
Yeah. So what that simplified, obviously, I can't go into the science right now in our time frame. Now, what the modeling does to add onto it is about the specifics of it, how much of an increase it will be, and what the time frame is. That's where a lot of the uncertainty is around within climate science. It's not about the major claim that there is climate change and we need to do something about it. That's a very strong statement that is with very little uncertainty.
I think I've got two more questions that I'd be really interested in. And one of them is where and how, or first of all, whether philosophers and climate scientists actually work together on several issues, or whether you think there's like a lot of room to improvement.
Yeah, great. So the really nice opportunity that I've been given is to do my PhD as a joint PhD within the Department of Philosophy and then also within a climate science department here. And because of that, I do get to interact with climate scientists. And I'm not the only one. Lots of people within the philosophy of science community do speak at a one-to-one level with climate scientists, understanding where they're coming from, how they do the science to try and get a better understanding of their methodologies, what assumptions they have about their models and these types of questions. And it's also not a one-way street in this way. There are a few climate scientists as well who have come to our side, so to speak, of the street and talked with us on the philosophy side and asked us questions about making sure that they are doing their science in a well-grounded way, in a way that provides strong notions of understanding and explanation. So I do think that it's very important when you're doing philosophy of science to have a good relationship with the science that you're actually doing and have a proper understanding of it. Because without it, we're kind of just talking into the air at that point. What was your other question?
I didn't ask it yet. I just wanted to wait whether you had. I wanted to ask a question.
No, go ahead.
Okay, and so my last question kind of goes beyond the philosophy. Mm-hmm. You said earlier that climate scientists write like these policy briefs or briefs summaries for decision makers. Mm-hmm. Does philosophy have a place in like policy consultancy or in a way to inform politicians about what decisions they should take, what policies they should implement, in your case, regarding climate science?
Mm-hmm. Very good. So this is a question that hasn't gotten a lot of attention in literature, but I think it is something that should be discussed because it goes to how we understand values as well within science. And then I guess we can talk about within climate science. So what values the policymakers are bringing to the table when they're making their decisions. And from a philosophy standpoint, we can talk about the different values that are important to have when making these decisions and help provide some guidance to how the arguments are structured as well. Because at the end of the day, policymakers generally around the world are going to implement policies that their constituency wants. Because for, I think, a good portion of them, if not the majority, they want to be reelected. And if philosophers can help in framing the arguments for why we should care about climate change, then it might give some pressure on whichever side of the argument the argumenter is on to help influence and provide a future that is in the best interest of human life and protecting at-risk communities. Because what we know about the climate and the impacts of climate change is that it vastly and dramatically impacts the people who are worst off among us or who have been marginalized within societies. And it predominantly impacts also women across the world. So if we can help policymakers to see that these are arguments that are important for all of us to survive on this planet together, then I think it is a good place for philosophers to be in.
Okay, last question. I think we've covered it a lot. You've answered a lot of our questions. Thank you. I think something that I would like you to answer for the listener, if there is a person who listened to this podcast, like, ooh, I'm really interested in this. Where do I start? You know, do you have any tips, any books, anything?
Exactly. So I hope that people have listened to this and come away thinking, I want to know more about philosophy of climate science. So right now, the best way to get into the philosophy of climate science community and get a wealth of understanding about what's going on within it is to, first, I would suggest looking at the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy article on climate science written by Wendy Parker. It's a very great introduction that is still quite relevant, even though it was written, I believe, 2 years ago. And then additionally, another great resource to begin your journey within philosophy of climate science would be looking at the Philosophy Compass articles written by a few researchers from the London School of Economics, specifically Roman Frigg, Erica Thompson, and Charlotte Verndel. They've wrote a really great two-part introduction to climate science from a philosophy or philosophy of science standpoint. Roman was my supervisor while I was at the LSE.
Great. Thanks so much for letting us interview you and bore us with all of our questions. And obviously, I hope that the listeners enjoyed listening to you and us asking the questions. If you guys want to know more about Philosophy Exchange, check out our Twitter account, which is at PhilXChange. And the X is written just as a letter. It's PHILX and then change all together. And we also have an Instagram account, which is just the usual name, Philosophy Exchange. You can see what's going on there. If you follow us, you'll stay updated about all of the coming episodes. We're really looking forward to having you back and to taking you on our journey. Thanks for joining and see you next time.